Thank you, Dan. Thank you, everyone. I'm Alan Bacon. I'm assistant professor at the University of Florida. Today I'm going to be presenting some preliminary data from some stuff that I've been working on with my first graduate student, Yaslyn Gonzalez, and Willie Harris, who many of y'all probably know is one of the most gracious individuals ever. And I've also got to acknowledge sort of the many, many people who I don't even know their names who have spent decades and years of their life mapping soils across the Southeast. So we do some regional work here looking at soil map units that couldn't be done unless individuals were out there in the 70s and 80s doing this work. So it doesn't really matter how you cut it, right? But what we're trying to do as pedologists or as critical zone scientists is very similar, right? We want to understand how Earth's surface is organized. And we want to understand processes and mechanisms that drive and are related to that organization, not just for academic purposes, but because we want to improve management and understanding of things. Right? So you can take kind of a classic Brantley and Weil, kind of organization of what pedology is, or perhaps a different, more complex, recently articulated conceptual model of pedology. You can also look at a nice simplified conceptual model on the right here of critical zone science, and we can see a lot of overlap. Right? This is a great place for two disciplines to work together. And I learned that as a student on the Piedmont of the southeastern U.S. Right? And both of these conceptual models, your discipline, whatever it may be, right, we get it. We understand that parent material variation is important. Right, a pedologist can look at these figures on the left, these tables, and understand why these two neighboring soils that have sat on Earth's surface for millions of years both have well-developed VTs, but one has a lot of sand in the surface and the other doesn't. We get it. We understand what parent material means. Right, and as pedologists and critical zone scientists, we can start to think about how these physical differences in the soil start to impact other spheres on Earth, hydrology, biology. We understand it. And we study this a lot. We study parent material extensively, particularly on portions of Earth that are residual landforms, right? Where soils and saprolite are developed from underlying parent material, the soil production function we just saw, right? This vertical conveyor belt of material, that's the residual landform. And we can see this kind of in the contemporary critical zone network, right? They've all got to varying degrees some interest in deposition, but with the exception of the intensively managed landscape CZO, all of these observatories are definitely on residual landforms, right? So for the last couple years, I've been living and working in a not residual landform, a depositional environment, right? And this is pictured here on the left. The southeastern coastal plain, let's call it. Right? And I started wondering, well, what about parent material here in this environment where soils aren't derived from underlying rock? We've got millions of years of sediments pretty much stacked up on top of one another, and then pedogenesis, soil formation happens. And what I'm going to show you today is that at a really big scale in these depositional landforms, parent material can be really well organized. Right? And we can use this kind of critical zone science approach, this integrated Earth surface science approach to really have a full comprehensive understanding of these depositional landforms as well. The critical zone sciences aren't just useful on Earth's residual surface. The first thing you need to know about this region, is that it's got this big scale driver of geomorphology. Right, and under these relic shoreline features, Yaslyn has mapped these. It's a pretty amazing accomplishment. We've known that there are relic shorelines across the region for a long time. People have been mapping them by hand based on topography maps. But they do it on small scales usually. And what Yaz has done is she's compiled all of these estimates and digitized them. You can now put them kind of in this full complete picture. And you can see these shorelines. They're marked in black. Right? The oldest shorelines are probably about 3 million years old. Those are furthest away from the contemporary shoreline. And as you move closer to the contemporary shoreline, you have younger and younger shorelines. But all the way, marine transgressions have created these features on the landscape, and we can map them. And when we think about deposition in these features, the big thing to lock into your head is this idea of high-energy water versus low-energy water. Right? So if you're at a shoreline, the contemporary shoreline now, you go to the beach, water's moving fast. Right? It's tumbling. Only the big, heavy stuff falls out of solution. Right? If you want deposition of finer material, you have to get to low-energy water. Right? And the second thing we need to know about this region is that marine sediments are not marine sediments are not marine sediments. Right? One of the very first things I tried to do to get my idea around parent material here was just say, okay, you know, how much variation is there in sea horizons of these depositional materials? And we can see clearly, you know, in a physical sense, there's variation. These are just 400 observations across the state of Florida from our state soil characterization data set of sea horizons. Right? There are textural differences. It's not all the same. And if we want to, you're going to appreciate how simple I like to keep things too. So this is not a fancy graph. But we could take those same 400 observations I just showed you and plot them as distance to one of these shoreline features that Yaz has mapped. And we can see that, you know, okay, what I'm plotting on the y-axis here is the percentage of very coarse and coarse sands, right? The biggest of the big, so the fine earth fraction. And sure, there's a lot of fine sands everywhere. Give me a break. But we can still see a trend, right? Clearly there's potential for bigger material to be deposited when you're close to a shoreline feature, right? There's a trend there, we can see it. And now what I can show you is that this trend in parent material that's spatially controlled at a really big scale here, we can also see that this parent material variation propagates into soils, essentially. So this figure on the left, I'm going to show you a few of these. They're pretty easy to understand. X-axis is distance to a shoreline. Y-axis is cumulative probability. And what we did was we took about 750,000 map units from this region, and we just made a frequency distribution. And then we fit that frequency distribution, which had on its x-axis the distance to the shoreline. We fit that with a kernel density plot. That gives us a function, and we can calculate cumulative probability that an individual map unit will be some distance to the shoreline or closer. Right? So let's look at control sections of these map units. This is a family modifier, right? Family level modifier. And we've got the two end members, the sandiest soils and the finest soils across this whole region. You can see that there's about an 80% chance that the sandy soils, the solid line, are going to be within 10 meters of one of these map shoreline features. In contrast, the very fine soils, you know, to have the same probability that map unit is located somewhere in this region, we can see you've got to move out to maybe, what, like 30 meters, three times as far from a shoreline. There's spatial control. And so this is like a coarse or a fine soil, right? And we can see this play out as well if we think about the BT horizon. Alpha sols and ulta sols, soils in the region, they're going to have a BT, right? They are... You know, you've got about, on the figure on the right, you've got about an 80% chance to find an ulta sol or alpha sol maybe, I don't know, 25 to 40 meters away from one of these map shorelines of Yaz's. In contrast, the quartzy sands, the coarsest of the coarse, the sands for miles, right? There, you've got, you know, 80% chance you're going to find it closer than 10 kilometers from a shoreline, right? So this parent material variation propagates up into soil properties, and we can appreciate how this BT horizon might actually affect hydrology, right? A soil with a BT is going to be very different than something that we call an entosol that has no BT, right? Water is going to be very different. And we can see that again. These are the same map units analyzed for drainage class, right? Well-drained soils are close to the shorelines. I'm sorry, excessively drained soils, the driest of the dry, are close to the shorelines. And you're only going to find poorly drained soils far away from the shorelines, right? Again, it's this high versus low energy deposition sets the stage for parent material properties, and it's propagated now in the contemporary critical zone. Oh, right on time. All right, but this isn't just academics, like understanding why soils are laid out. We're really starting to push this to understand what we as humans, right? This critical zone conception here with this little man or woman, this person at the bottom, impacting things. That's what matters. That's what we're really here for. And We're starting to look at this in a variety of ways, and I'm going to talk about a couple here. So the first thing, what do we have? We're studying a couple of things along these shorelines at the plots in red, but what's really interesting is what's going on around our plots. So I've got an aerial photo from 1995 of Trail Ridge. This is in North Florida. It's one of the most prominent shorelines around. And what you can see right on the ridge, I don't have a pointer, sorry, is some cleared land, right? And then in 2005, you know, imagine carrying this Trail Ridge line over, you've got more cleared land. And in 2016, right, you see this line, right? Land is being cleared right along Trail Ridge. And what's going on is heavy mineral mining, mostly for titanium. These same processes that result in the deposition of the coarsest particles result in the deposition of heavy minerals. This is our version of mountaintop mining essentially. We're talking about digging down many, many, many meters, excavating huge disturbance, mining disturbance that's closely spatially associated with these shorelines. And then I'm going to conclude with another cool example, right? So this is North Florida. The black line is the Cody Scarp, another pretty well-known shoreline. The red area is mostly in Suwannee County, and it's the best place for wastewater, on-site wastewater management, right? It could be a septic field. It could be a dairy manure spray field. It's a great place. You go out there, you auger, you're going to see well-drained material, right? All of your indicators are going to tell you this is a great place for wastewater management. You have coated sands. Let's move all of our operations there. And that's what you'll see if you go look at the soil. But if you kind of bring in this critical zone and geoscience approach to actually understand what this scarp is doing and why it's there, you get a whole nother picture, right? So this scarp above it, you can see a lot of surface water, right? Those are the blue lines. Those are rivers. There's a lot of surface water. And right below the scarp, going south, surface water disappears. Why? Because we can understand from a geoscientist, geomorphology perspective that this ancient shoreline, which about 3 million years ago created the scarp, actually dug away at a confining clay layer that sits on top of our karst. Right? So below the scarp, that clay layer has been reworked and largely removed. And the reason soils are well-drained and they give us these great indicators is because water plummets right into the Floridian aquifer, right through the karst. There's no confining layer. Right? And so we can take this critical zone perspective and better understand sort of our actions on the landscape. So I've shown you at a really large scale, there's systematic variation in parent material properties and soil properties in the depositional environment, right? And we can think about these and organize them in our heads very well with this kind of critical zone approach. Contemporary processes are affected by the last 3 million years of deposition. And I think this points to a really cool place where the critical zone can build, if I may, right? We can think about bigger scales in these depositional environments. We can also think about the relationship between critical zone science and the depositional environment, which covers the majority of Earth's surface. Thank you. Yes, it's Sergo data, pulled right off the web. We could talk about it. This is an amazing conversation. There's so many details, but when you want to work at this scale and understand soils and get estimates, what else is there? It's an amazing tool. It's not perfect, but I'd like to think that when our N cranks up above hundreds of thousands, I know which way the wind's blowing. Sorry, I missed the first part.
I realize you're more or less working in the Florida coast, but have you looked at Daniel and Gamble and how their studies over the years on the coastal plain compared to what you're doing?
Yep. We read a lot of their stuff. So the only data that's Florida-centric is these data. because these are direct biogeochemical observations of pedons, and the state of Florida has a remarkable archive of these. We've struggled a little bit to get geochemical pedon data that's more than like an N of 20 up the coast. But everything else here is definitely regional beyond Florida. Was there something in particular you were wondering what the relationship was? Our model of how soils are distributed. I don't know exactly which model of theirs you're talking about. Okay, look forward to it.
I think we'd better move on.
Thank you.